broadcasting around the world on International Shortwave and on the Radio Disclosure Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Aaron, and folks, tonight is a topic that's going to leave your hair curling. An explosion in Nashville. There's so many strange things with this story. Officially, unofficially, rumored, so on and so forth. But what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to stick to the facts. I'm going to stick to just facts. I'm going to ask questions about these facts and what has been reported in the news media. And it's hard to unpack it all. Even that, because you got News 2 and National reporting crazy stuff like this.
Police are searching for a motive for the Christmas Day bombing. It turns out that suspect, Anthony Warner, was very interested in several conspiracy theories. A source familiar with the Nashville bomb investigation tells ABC News that Warner may have been tracking a conspiracy about lizard people. Now, authorities tell ABC News that Warner may have spent time hunting for alien life forms in a near state by park.
Now, hold on. Did you just hear that? Okay. Here's the deal. I'm going to go over my perspective of the story. And then I'm going to ask the questions that, as a reporter / on-air host, is very interested in. And I have to ask these questions not because I am a conspiracy theorist here. Not because I'm interested in lizard people and lizard man and aliens and UFOs and things of that nature. I'm asking these legitimate questions because I think it affects everyone in the United States. And when I say it affects everyone, the reason why I say it affects everyone is because if these questions aren't answered, if they go left unanswered, I think it's either bad police business or there's something else fishy going on. So I'm going to start. Before I get into that part, I'm going to talk about the story a little bit. First off, my hat's off to the Nashville Police Department and the EMS. The emergency services crews that are out there shortly after the bomb, my hat's off to you. That going on to a scene like that, dealing with that trauma, dealing with a disaster, that's something hard. I have friends of mine that are on the Metro Nashville Police Force. Friends of mine that work in the fire department. So, one of the problems of telling this story is how bad the news media itself has reported it. That's one problem. The second problem is the local news media, just like our News 2 here in Nashville, is reporting that the guy is a lizard man hunter and alien hunter and has been doing this in a local state park. Tennessee's got some beautiful state parks. I don't know which one. I'd be interested to know which one he was going to because I frequent those parks. Anyways. According to the official news story, 1:22 a.m., the RV arrives on 2nd Avenue, downtown Nashville. At 5:30 in the morning, the police were called to shots fired as they arrived on the scene. The RV was stating that there is a bomb in it, and it would be going off in 15 minutes. From CNN.com, this vehicle will explode in 15 minutes, unquote, said the voice, according to William, after repeating the message for a few minutes. The voice then said this vehicle will explode in 14 minutes. Countdown was on. The vehicle exploded, did not take out communications until roughly 12 o'clock for most of Nashville. It wasn't instantaneous. The communications went out because the batteries inside the building finally went dead because the commercial power was disrupted coming into the building. And my understanding is the generators also failed. One of the emails that I got, there was water on every floor. There was water in the basement. They had to pump out the water. AT&T did a massive job in restoring communications with the damage that was done to that building. Some history on that building. From my understanding, that building was part of the AT&T Long Line Network. Those buildings were built back in the 1960s to withstand nuclear bombs. Not a direct hit, but to withstand a nuclear bomb within 2 miles of a strike. The building was not designed to take a direct hit like it did. Now, it wasn't a nuclear bomb that went off, but here's the thing. These things are structurally reinforced. In some of the old long line sites, they had sensors that would sense whether or not if a nuclear bomb has went off, and certain doors would close, sealing that part of the building off. If you want to get more information on that, go to YouTube and start doing some research on the old AT&T long line stuff. It's there. For those of you that don't know what AT&T long lines was, this is how long distance was done. You would pick up the phone in your local area, get connected to your central office. You would then hit that switch, and then you would hit a microwave tower, which would bounce that off multiple other microwave towers to the location in which you were going to. Now, during the time that this system was developed was, during the Cold War. So communications was a massive thing for AT&T to make sure that they had up. And a lot of these major lines, these microwave lines, and that's radio waves going through the air directed from tower to tower. Now, when you see these things that look like satellite dishes but pointed like towards the horizon on these sites, that's what that is. That is a microwave dish. And that's how telephone communication worked. And these sites had to be reinforced. Communication is the utmost importance. I do not think AT&T had a fault here. There's this thing that we call in the communications industry the last mile. That's what that building is for all of these areas. It's the last mile. That's how this stuff works. To run a line to make it redundant to all these different locations would have been near to impossible. Now, in today's world with IP technology, that's a little bit different. When you're starting to talk about 911 systems and you're talking about those kinds of systems, but to your average end user with a home telephone, with a dial-up telephone or internet service at their house, making the last mile, as they call it, completely redundant is almost near to impossible. In data centers across the United States, when we install a data center, normally we have telco service that comes in on a north side or a south side, and we make sure those go off of different poles or different routes back to the main hosting providers, such as a provider like the CenturyLink now, or Level 3 was CenturyLink, or Verizon, or take your pick. As a broadcast engineer, I don't fault AT&T. They worked their butts off getting the systems back up in an extremely timely manner, especially with the report that I read, there was water on every floor. I am sure the sprinkler systems were dousing water everywhere. So, now that you know the history of that site, and you go back and you look at some of the photos, the few photos that you have of the AT&T building, the AT&T building almost acted as a reflector for the explosion going towards the other buildings. And I had to laugh in one of the photos. I did notice some of the wire mesh used for EMP pulsing pulled from the rubble that obviously came from the AT&T building. I'm not like literally laughing at it, but I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, wow, AT&T had this stuff in this building. They built it during this time frame. And they were able to restore stuff in an extremely timed manner. There's been some reports about the Nashville Police Department had information about Anthony Warner back in 2019, and they didn't act on it, but they reported it to the FBI. The Nashville Police Department did everything within the law. And that's the thing. Us as people that want our freedoms. Yes, Anthony Warren still had his freedoms. But here's a question that I'm going to pose. If it was reported to the FBI that this guy was making bombs and could be a threat, if this was a fertilizer bomb or whatever kind of bomb it was, how could he have attained that much material with that kind of report going on? Homeland Security, you can go on down the list. The other thing that I find very interesting, the news media kept asking the question, is this an act of domestic terrorism? And the FBI kept saying no. I think if the guy was targeting the AT&T building to blow up a building, if Timothy McVeigh was charged with what he was charged with, I would definitely say this was an act of terrorism. We can agree to disagree on that fact. I'm baffled. I'm completely baffled. When we come back from the break, I'm going to continue on with the story here. We're going to talk about the DNA evidence. I'm going to lay some timelines out for you on why I think something isn't right here. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. I'm going to try to break this down for you a little bit more. I'm telling you, this news story is so complex, so complicating. It's really hard to figure out where to start. So, the official news story goes as such. An explosion goes off downtown Nashville. After the explosion has gone off downtown Nashville, crews from local services, FBI, so on and so forth, are searching through the rubble. And they find a partial VIN number. That partial VIN number led them to Anthony Warner, also known as Tony Warner. They went to their house, or his house, let me rephrase that, on December 26th, the day after. There's no RV there. There's no Tony or Anthony Warner there. So they start searching the place, Now, first off, this guy just blew the living crap out of downtown Nashville. Massive bomb. They don't clear the area. Fox 17 is on site with a camera streaming live on Facebook and on YouTube. If this guy was able to get as much explosives that he did for downtown Nashville, and if I was raiding his house, my concern would be whether or not if there's still more explosives in that house and booby traps. Now, whether or not if they took the proper precautions for that, I don't know. But I know the distance of Fox 17, if that house exploded, shrapnel can get blown. And there's pieces of the bomb being found. Yeah. Did they clear out the local residents? No, there's still cars driving by. You can see them on... Okay, my point's made. So you don't know if this guy's dead or not. And they're searching the complex. You see him take out a few bags and so on and so forth. Okay? Now, here's what's interesting. So they wanted to try to get some DNA evidence. Now, one of the things that I will and I'm going to point out that I find is odd and fishy with this is this. I'm going to read here from WSMV.com, which is one of the Nashville local news stations. The DNA from a hat and glove was compared to the DNA samples recovered from the crime scene on 2nd Avenue North, matched Warner. Officers with the Tennessee Highway Patrol also identified a VIN from reconstructed pieces of the RV recovered at the crime scene. The VIN and DNA matched, identified Warner as the suspect. Okay. Here's the thing. I don't even know which one I want to cover first. That's what's so interesting to me. Like, I'm having trouble figuring out which one is more interesting. I'm having trouble here figuring out which one is more interesting to cover first. Well, first off, we've covered the fact that as someone who wants to play things cautious, especially after a massive bomb exploded downtown Nashville, and if anything from history has been learned from people that build bombs, that they may want to hurt other people. The Unabomber would set a bomb, explode, and then detonate another one after emergency crews arrived. That's history. FBI knows this. So they arrive on the scene there, don't clear the scene. The DNA comes from a hat and a glove. Now hold on. They have access to this guy's house. A hat and a glove. Are okay. And I have an expert that we're going to talk to here on this show that's going to talk more about this. But a hat and glove is okay. But it's not good forensic science. A toothbrush. Dirty underwear. Clean underwear still has DNA on it. Bed sheets. Hair from the shower. You ever notice how your shower gets clogged and you got to open that sucker up and shove something down there and get all that hair out of there? This guy had long hair. Now, bomb goes off December 25th. December 26th, they're at his property. The official report did not come out to the general public about the fact that this was the guy until the 28th. Here's the problem I have with that. What right does any government agency have to withhold information that could possibly save lives? That's what I see here. And let me break that down for you. If the guy was not confirmed dead yet, and they have not confirmed DNA yet, why did they not release his driver's license photo immediately and say, this is the suspect, let me rephrase that, this is the suspect, and in addition to him being the suspect, we may think he's dead, but if you see this guy, call us immediately. I have a problem with that. If you're not 100% sure that this guy isn't dead, you mean to tell me you're going to put the general public at risk based upon your gut instinct? No. Nashville's my town. I've lived here my whole life. I was born here. No, that is not okay. That's why I sit back in my chair and I ponder this. Not to be a conspiracy nut here. I want to know why they used a hat and gloves. Tennessee's really not a glove state. Doesn't really get cold enough to wear gloves. Week right after Christmas, we got a day at 68 degrees outside. This isn't Michigan. This isn't Ohio. This is Tennessee. We're lucky if we get snow. I'll take some, by the way. So the hat and gloves is very suspicious to me. The fact that someone's going to get in an RV and kill themselves and give a warning message to not hurt anybody else is also suspicious to me. The news story about him hunting alien and lizard people also seems strange and suspicious to me. The fact that Anthony Warner deeded his house to someone that she claims she doesn't even know him out in Los Angeles also seems suspicious to me. And the biggest two of all to me, of while I'm going down the list, even though we've already discussed it, has to be, if you don't know if he's dead or not, and not knowing whether or not if he's made any more explosives, not reporting that to the general public also seems suspicious to me. And did I go over the hat and gloves already? Because, yeah, you can get good cells from that, but my DNA expert's going to go over more information on that. Hat and gloves? Yeah, we'll wait for her on that. I don't know. Now, I'm going to get into the little odd and weird here. I'm going to play you the message that the van was playing, the audio clips, and I've denoised them for you, so you don't have any of the weird ambient noise. I'm going to play the message for you, so that way you can hear what the van was saying. So a lot of people have said that's a robotic voice that's been recorded. I don't think so. I think that's an actual person's voice that's been pitched up. It sounds robotic because of the pitching. You pitch it down and it sounds more like this. Okay. The weird water sound is the denoise, so that way you can understand it. Now, the second part to this, which is going to be the second guest we're going to have tonight, is when we're going to talk about this, is reverse speech. This guy's been doing it for, I don't know, a long time, since I was a little kid. Probably over 30 years. Only humans do reverse speech. Now, you can get some computers that, when you type certain things in, that you know that when you say it forwards, it'll say it backwards. But the slips that the human makes in the reverse speech basically sets it up for you knowing, get a shadow of a doubt, that it's a human, because you can't like just say it forwards. Someone else can say it forwards and say the same thing backwards. I've tried doing exactly what this says forwards and backwards, and it doesn't match. I'm going to play this backwards for you two times and see if you can hear what I hear. So if you didn't capture it, it says, "I hope you have a merry, merry Christmas." I'm just going to play the Christmas part for you once. I'm going to play the full thing for you in full one time. So I would venture to say that this was actually voiced by a human. And in addition to it being voiced by a human, I would also venture to say that whoever voiced it knew exactly what it was going to be used for. And we're going to talk to my second guest, and he's going to give us the down low if he thinks this is a human voice or not. Here's the thing. I'm not talking conspiracy theory. I've not even brought up voter fraud. Okay? I am just talking about how the news was reported and the information that has been given to us in the order that it has been given to us. I still want to know if they did not know that he was dead yet. What gives anybody the right to put the general public at risk or take that risk? That's my question. Call me crazy. Many people have. We come back from the break. We're going to hit up one of our experts. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. This whole story, as we continue on down the line, continues to get stranger and stranger.
Testing. The evidence was compared to evidence collected from a vehicle used by the person of interest in this case. At approximately midnight central time, forensic scientists with TBI confirmed a match of the DNA at both locations belonging to the person of interest in this case.
So there is the official story that gets sent out to us. I'm going to estimate less than 12 hours they had the DNA back. Now, there's been some people that theorize the DNA is come back too quick or so on and so forth. We're going to ask that question to my DNA expert. But I'm going to read the official news story. It says the DNA from a hat and glove was compared to DNA samples recovered from the crime scene on 2nd Avenue North and matched Warner. Officers of the Tennessee Highway Patrol also identified a VIN from reconstructing pieces from the RV in the crime scene. The VIN and DNA matches identified Warren as the suspect. Dr. Mel Ketchum, joins us from her ranch in Texas. And briefly, for the audience that doesn't know who you are, can you give a quick synopsis of your background in the world of forensic science?
Well, I've spent 30 years in the science of genetics. We did multiple forensic cases. I testified in court. I was accepted as an expert witness with Fry hearing. I did work for the FBI. I also worked on the World Trade Center sequence analysis. We've done Innocence Project cases and death penalty cases. We did a lot of forensic work.
So, first, the biggest question that most people are going to ask is, and everyone has got this massive conspiracy theory that the DNA came back too quick. What's your thoughts on that? We've got about a 6 to 12 hour turnaround time.
Yeah, that can be done quite easily. If you're on it, you can get it done. There are fast extraction techniques that can be used. Once it's extracted, you know, it doesn't take that long to actually run the forensic panel. It's a fairly quick test. So as long as there's somebody in the lab ready to go, it can easily be done that fast.
So that one's debunked. Second question that I have for you. What do you think about them using, and I'm having trouble finding another news article, and I've read somewhere that they pulled it from his vehicle, a hat and a glove for the DNA sample. When they had access to his house, they had full, complete reign of the property. Why would they choose a hat and a glove, and I believe, once again, that it was in a vehicle?
Well, that's a little bit different, because normally, oftentimes, at least one of the samples will be the suspect's toothbrush. Because, one, it's an excellent source of DNA because the cells abrade onto the brush. And even when you rinse it, there's a lot of DNA that remains. Plus, people don't generally share their toothbrushes, so it's generally, in almost all cases, a pure sample. It's not contaminated with another person's DNA. A hat or a cap is a really good source also, because it abrades on the forehead of the person. But the problem with that is that you can, whenever you actually have a cap or glove and you leave it around, if somebody gets in your car, they may move it out of the way and contaminate the sample with their own DNA. And so it's always better to get something that is not shared, generally, or moved by another person, or worn by another person. Hats, caps, sometimes are shared, the same with gloves, but that's not the case usually with a toothbrush. So if I were at the crime scene, I would prefer the toothbrush. And they did do one good thing, because they used two samples, and that's always good also. To have, you know, two items run as far as the DNA as knowns, and then you have your unknowns from the crime scene. And but I don't know why they didn't use a toothbrush or something from the house that most likely had not been touched by another person.
So the thought pattern of using those two items makes it look somewhat suspicious that they would use those particular two items to match the DNA in downtown Nashville.
It wouldn't be my choice, but, you know, maybe if it was the highway patrol, they're probably not as trained as a forensic science unit, a crime scene unit that would come out.
The FBI was on scene.
If the FBI was on scene, then they should have been trained, as well as actually everybody should know about the toothbrush thing, or the fact that you should try to something that's not potentially handled or worn by anybody else.
What about underwear?
Oh, that'll work.
What about washed underwear?
wash underwear will still yield DNA. It's not as plentiful, but it still, I mean, we've gotten DNA off of underwear a lot of times. So, you know, some of them were clean and some were not. So,
what about shirts, clothes?
Yeah, around the collar and all, where anywhere it abrades the skin at all or rubs against your skin, there's going to be abundant DNA. That's why I always would prefer, though, something that is more personal, like a toothbrush or underwear, or, you know, something that is obviously only touching that one person.
So, all right.
But that's
I'm not going to, we're not going to question whether or not if the DNA on the site in the hat and glove matched. It just seems very suspicious based upon, and this is, again, my opinion, based upon good forensic science, if you have access to the house and you're going to collect forensic science from the house, it seems odd that you would choose a hat and a glove that was in a vehicle when you have much more clean evidence inside of...
That's true. Like a soft drink can or a beer can or whatever, that yields good DNA. But once again, he could have had a friend over or something. But, you know, generally, like I say, personal items, you know, more like a toothbrush are my preference. And I think that, you know, most forensic scientists would agree with that. You know, or articles of clothing, something that, you know, a razor, you know, things that don't generally get shared. That's your best item. You know, something in a car, you have people in and out of a car. You know, unless, I mean, if he had anybody in a car with him at some point, the hat and gloves were there, you know, they could have been contaminated. I mean, that's not to say that if you have a contaminated item, you still can, you know, find the major and minor contributor in a mixture. But it just complicates matters. It's a lot easier just to have a known that you're quite certain is going to be a pure, uncontaminated sample.
Makes sense. Well, thank you for joining us. And, folks, we're going to continue on with our next expert right after the break. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. We're trying to unravel this Christmas Day explosion in Nashville, my home city. And as promised, we're going to talk to someone that knows about reverse speech. They've been doing it for, I don't want to say, but I know I used to listen to him when he was on the Art Bell Show when I was probably 10 years old. So that's at least 20 years that I know of. He joins us from Australia, from the land down under. How are you, David?
Hey, doing well. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, other than... trying to figure out what's exactly happened here, and I'm not so sure that we'll ever get to the full truth.
Well, let's see if I can help you.
Well, before we go too crazy here, most people may not know about reverse speech. They may not have heard of reverse speech. They may not know the science behind it. For a brief moment, can you kind of tee that up for us so that way... Sure. Most people understand before we get into the science behind this.
Sure. Okay. Well, look, I've been researching this for 37 years. It's been my full-time profession for 37 years. I started off with satanic messages in rock and roll, which was way back controversy back in the 80s. My research began initially trying to work out what this was all about. Was it a hoax? and what was causing it. It wasn't too long before I discovered that backward messages in rock and roll were not just limited to music, they were also occurring in speech. And if you take any section of speech and run it in reverse about once every 15 or 20 seconds, you're going to hear these very clear statements amongst the gibberish. That is what the person is thinking and feeling at the time of speaking. Now, I've developed a theory to explain this, and the theory basically states that language is bilevel, forwards as well as backwards. As all of us are speaking, we're creating the sounds of our speech in such a way that we're saying two things, one forwards and one backwards. There's nothing sinister or spooky or anything about it. It's just a natural functional language. The left brain speaks forward, the right brain speaks in reverse. It's one of the many forms of unconscious communication that transpires in humans. So, another form of language, occurring constantly throughout speech. It's a natural phenomenon.
So you've been doing this for a long freaking time. Now, the biggest,
yes, indeed.
The biggest question that I would pose to you, in political structures, in political statements where people are making statements and then the actual news comes out later, how many times has your research and science been proven correct in this? And can you give one or two examples?
Oh, gee. many times it's been proven accurate. I've been accurately predicting political trends for quite some time. Let me find, let me play you reversal on Donald Trump from the debates, okay? And this is an interesting example, and it will show you how reverse speech can be predictive and look into the future. So listen to this forwards.
He has no law enforcement.
That's not
support.
True.
Almost
that's
nothing.
Look.
Really, who do you have? Name one group that supports you. Name one group that came out and supported you.
Let me run this in reverse, and he says, did I make it with no win?
Did I make it with no win?
And that's a classic. He said that back in the debates, and here we are now looking at this exact situation. There was no win in the election, but did he make it anyway? So it accurately describes the current political landscape. So that's a classic example. Look, reverse speech has been used by the authorities in it's found locations of murder weapons, name of accomplices in crime. The CIA is using reverse speech. If you Google reverse speech CIA, you'll see a whole page on reverse speech on the CIA website. It's got more acceptance than what the public realizes. It's being used very covertly at this current time. Not much public knowledge about it. And when this Nashville bombing came out and I was reading some of the clips about it, I was thinking, people don't know much about reverse speech at all. They're talking about satanic messages and Led Zeppelin and the Beatles. And I'm reading these news reports and saying, we've come a long way since those days. So I use it in therapy. I've got a very active therapeutic practice where I work with clients and solve their issues using reverse speech.
Do you have a website where people could go to learn more about reverse speech?
Sure, reversespeech.com, www.reversespeech.com. That's the main site. I've got many other sites, but start with that one and see where that takes you.
Okay. The Christmas Day bombing. The van
yes, indeed.
Has a message playing on it over and over and over.
Yes, it does.
We've been told that, from the official news agencies and such, that they believe that it was a robotic message. I've pitched the thing down. I think it's a male voice that's been pitched up, but I want to hear your perspective on this voice. Give me your evidence. Tell me what is going on here.
Okay. Well, in my opinion, it's not a robotic voice. It's a human voice. I know they're saying it's robotic, but all the inflections of the voice makes it sound human. In my mind, the fact that it has a reversal on it will also indicate it's the human voice. Far as I'm aware, robotic voices and computer-generated voices do not have reversals. There's no soul involved. That's all I can tell you. It certainly sounds human to me. I don't believe it's a robotic voice. I think what happened is someone recorded it before the bombing, and it was set to automatically repeat coming from the van. So that's my opinion.
Do you have the audio samples?
Yeah, sure. So here's the clip forwards. This area must be evacuated now. Play it again. That sounds human to me. It's got the inflections and everything on it, And you run it in reverse, and you hear what I think is a very clear message. Are you ready? A Merry Christmas for all. So here it is in reverse. And again. Now, look, if you've been just presented with this for the first time and know nothing about reverse speech, I can understand how you could be pretty freaked out about it. But to me, it's just a standard everyday speech reversal that occurs. I find hundreds of them each day in my work. It's a sarcastic message. The bomb was going to go off on Christmas Day. Whoever recorded this message knew that Christmas Day was when it was going to be detonated, and they're just being very sarcastic. And their sarcasm is coming out in their reverse speech.
That's amazing.
That's how I explain it.
So, I don't even know what to say, because the more evidence that I continue to look at this, the stranger this whole entire thing has been. I mean, from the message to the vehicle literally not hurting or killing anybody other than the supposed victim himself.
Uh-huh.
The DNA evidence is strange. The whole thing. I sit back and I'm having a hard time understanding the entire thing. And if you were a betting man,
yes,
and you're hearing this,
yes,
you're basically saying that yes, that was done by a human. This was not a recording, and they knew exactly what was going on.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah. When they made the recording, they knew exactly what was going on, and they knew they were going to detonate it on Christmas Day. That's why it comes out in the backward speech. So, nothing secret about it, really. Sorry if I sound so nonchalant. I work with these every day.
Well, I will definitely say thank you for joining us. This whole thing. I mean, this is for Nashville, this has been a hard thing to figure out and stomach. I mean, the news reports all the way from the guy hunting lizard people, the DNA evidence being collected from a hat and a pair of gloves out of a vehicle. At least that's what I remember seeing in one report. To them not reporting and sending an image out until they had their DNA evidence back. To the reverse speech of knowing that this has been recorded by somebody with some technical skill in the sense of audio editing. Yeah. The list keeps getting weirder and stranger. Well, if you have any updates on this, email us at show@radiodisclosure.com. That's show@radiodisclosure.com. And I will say that I'm I'm interested to hear from you, the general public, on your perspective on this. I'd like to say thank you to WTWW and all of our local affiliates. This is a radio disclosure.